In July 2016, police in North Miami were involved in the shooting of an unarmed African-American man. Charles Kinsey was working as a caretaker for an autistic man named Arnaldo Rios Soto.
It was a summer afternoon. Arnaldo had wandered outside of his group home. His behavioral aide, Charles Kinsey, followed after him.
That's Audrey Quinn, a WNYC News health reporter.
As Charles puts it, Arnaldo had flopped down in the middle of the street, decided, I'm not going any further. I'm going to play with my truck right here. A passing driver was concerned, mistook his truck for a gun, called 911.
There's this guy in the middle of the road, and he has what appeared to be a gun. He's sitting there saying,
what is he doing with the gun?
He has it to his head. And there's a guy there trying to talk him out of it.
A SWAT team shows up. 7 minutes later, one of the officers fires three shots, one of which hits Charles Kinsey.
Arnaldo's case highlights a growing problem in the United States, the ways in which police are trained to interact with people with autism, and in particular, people of color with autism. Audrey Quinn is the host of a new podcast from WNYC Studios called After Effect, which dives into the complexities of Arnaldo's life and that last day in July. She told me that a lot of confusion stems from the limited perception of autism among the general public.
There's been this idea now, I think for decades, that autism is something that affects primarily young white boys. That's based mainly on just the history of who was diagnosed, of whose families made the most noise. And there is this growing recognition right now that autism does not choose that way.
Right. Tell us a little bit about how, when it comes to people of color, when it comes to Black and Brown Americans in particular, what are the challenges to diagnosing this community? Is it that they're underdiagnosed, misdiagnosed? Is it a money issue? What are the problems here?
Yeah, all of the above. Black and brown kids are much less likely to get diagnosed. They're much more likely to get diagnosed for more behavioral issues or just have their behavior seen as bad behavior instead of an actual diagnosis of autism.
What's the problem at the very beginning? Is there just a lack of recognition by parents in terms of what some of the symptoms could be? Is it the fact that there aren't enough healthcare providers who are paying attention to this?
Yeah, I'd say it's threefold. One, there's the classic issue of healthcare providers paying less attention to the concerns of Black and brown patients and Black and brown parents. Arnaldo's mother, who is a nurse, she's a registered nurse, and she had studied autism. It was part of her thesis in grad school. She presented to her doctor, here's the 7 signs of autism that my young son has. And the doctor said, no, you're just being picky. You're being a picky mom.
The doctor said, he's okay. He's okay. You are a nurse. You are a picky nurse. It's okay. Don't worry. Forget it.
He didn't believe
you. No, él no creyó en mí. Él no creyó.
The second thing would be parents of color having less exposure to the autism diagnosis, being less aware that this could be maybe what's going on with my kid. And then three, it could be doctors being more likely to see these atypical behaviors as behavioral issues instead of as an actual diagnostic issue.
And I think we know also because of a lack of accurate diagnoses, we've seen, generally speaking, that our criminal justice system is where a lot of folks end up being absorbed, right? When they do have issues that need medical treatment but are misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, then unfortunately some of these behaviors might lead people to being in contact with the criminal justice system, correct?
Yeah. There was one Black autistic self-advocate I talked to, and I asked her, well, where are the autistic adults of color? Why don't we see autistic adults of color? And she said, my belief is they're largely in prison because the way that they were, quote unquote, acting out was perceived as criminal rather than part of a disability.
Mm-hmm. So in this episode, you talk about Arnaldo Rios Soto. Tell us a little bit about what his life is like.
Yeah. So Arnaldo grew up mainly with his mother, Gladys, and his older sister, Miriam. He was born in Puerto Rico. And at a pretty young age, his mom identified that her son was autistic, or at least she believed he was autistic. She had a lot of trouble getting both diagnoses and services in Puerto Rico, so she eventually moved the family to Miami. And then throughout Arnaldo's childhood in Miami and then later in Texas, both she and Arnaldo's sister Miriam fought really hard to get him services. He was in special ed school situations where an aide actually punched him. Someone pushed him down the stairs of a school bus. These are education workers. He was in a group home where someone hit him over the head with a broom and actually broke the skin on his head, where his arm was broken on two separate occasions by restraint procedures.
And tell us a little bit about the case in this podcast specifically. Like, what ends up happening in this story?
Yeah, so as a result of this late diagnosis, Arnaldo doesn't get a proper diagnosis till he's 8 years old. Finally getting the diagnosis and not being able to get him into proper schooling programs, Arnaldo, as I say in the podcast, Arnaldo does not learn to read. Arnaldo does not learn to write. Just basic communication. It's really impressive how Arnaldo has figured out his own methods of getting across how he's feeling, what he's thinking. But when I talk to other folks who work with him now, they say, you know, if Arnaldo had been worked with early on communication, he'd be able to express himself in a way that other people would understand a lot more clearly. By receiving this delayed treatment and also receiving oftentimes abusive treatment, Arnaldo picked up a lot of coping mechanisms that were not always beneficial for him. He'll act out aggressively. He has acted out physically in response to the way he's being treated. So what that meant is he, as he aged, was put into more and more restrictive settings. And instead of being helped, instead of getting therapy, people just found ways to restrict his movement, both through restraints and medication.
So tell us a little bit about the concerns about having inadequate treatment when it comes to these types of developmental disabilities, particularly when we're talking about communities of color.
Yeah, so long-term effects. One study's main findings was that regressive autism, which is characterized by a loss of social and language skills that someone's already developed, it's twice as common in African-American children as it is in their white peers. Studies have also found that African-American and Hispanic kids with autism, they're less likely to be referred to specialists. They're also often misdiagnosed as having something else like ADHD or conduct disorder.
And is it a question of having medical professionals or, you know, specialists in this field, having more of them, having people do more outreach? How do we see a solution to this?
I think it's largely an issue of awareness, both of letting parents, making parents aware that, hey, maybe what's going on with your kid, maybe your kid is acting differently than your other child because they have autism. Also making practitioners aware that, one, autism is a possible diagnosis in their patients, but two, that kids of color are more likely to be less diagnosed, so just be extra vigilant.
Audrey Quinn is a news health reporter with WNYC, and she's the host of the new podcast, After Effect. Audrey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.